Wiki Circuitry, 7 PM Saturdays, 90.7 FM Sin Radio.
Rubber duckies!
This is Wiki Circuitry.
I am Rob.
This is Tom over here.
And I'm Rob over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered
We've been over this.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
This is Wiki Circuitry.
We've also covered that.
Did I say that already?
Yeah, a bit.
Okay. I'll say it once more time just to make sure that everybody got it.
I'm Rob.
This is Tom. Wiki Circuitry. Enough of this silliness.
Madness.
We're going to take you on a wild journey across Wikipedia and our minds today.
It's very loosely based on a common household game.
Very
sure
loosely.
You know it. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but
indeed.
You know, it's not that. It's Wiki Circuitry.
Based on
just
the concept.
Deal
of,
with it. I mean,
yeah. We've come to grips with it. Maybe you should.
Oh, dear.
Where are we going today, Robin?
Well, I believe we're going to start with our mystery topic, which was sent in by Elise last week. I bet you'll find that funny.
Yeah.
It's really Alice, but, you know, it's ghetto goat.
Yeah, sure does.
Yep, so we're going to start with something called an aglet, which is that little plasticky or metal bit at the end of your shoelace. But we'll get to that.
Yep, we'll get to that.
Moving right along, later. Tom, to...
Harrison Ford.
You'll know him from Star Wars, and if you don't know him from Star Wars...
Then, frankly, you shouldn't be alive.
Good point.
Yep.
Rolling
on to the year 2000 from there.
Yep. Moving from there to Oxford University.
Oxford. Then on to our word of the week, serendipity.
And
lovely little word, that one.
Serendipity.
Yes.
Serendipidacious.
Yep.
And then we're moving on to our wacky celebrity of the week, which is Christian Bale.
Christian Bale it is.
And we'll get to why we've chosen him a little bit later.
Indeed. At this point, after running down topics, we'd like to give a call out for the mystery point for next week.
Now, we are, in fact, magically not in the studio at the time you're hearing us because we're just so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We're sending this to the future with our minds and also a compact disc.
Yes.
So why don't you hit us on our Facebook page?
That's a good idea.
So look up Wiki Circuitry in your Facebook search.
Indeed. You can also go to wikicircuitry.blogspot.com. That's wikicircuitry.blogspot.com and give us a comment and we'll consider it.
I won't.
No, he won't. He doesn't consider many things.
I will just
He's inconsiderate.
Yeah.
Yep. This has gone on far long enough. It is roughly sometime, probably about 7 past 7.
And if you don't believe us, check with the clock. They're probably more accurate than us.
Yeah.
Let's jump straight into this whole business of an aglet.
Yeah.
Now, we briefly touched on...
Not sure if you covered it. That was actually Get It Together by the Go Team.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. I am
talking about gaming ramblings.
I was just thinking, Little Big Planet. Love that game.
Yeah. Now, aglets. Tell me about aglets, Robin.
Well, I was going to get you to tell me about aglets, Tom.
All right. Well, they're the little metal or plastic bits on the end of a shoelace.
Such as here, if you just look over here through your radio
scope. I'm looking at mine now. It's doing a good job. My laces are unfrayed as yet.
Beautiful stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You better believe it.
There's some lovely laces, Tom, on your volleys,
yeah.
Perhaps.
No. All-stars. Thank you.
All-stars, yes.
Yes, yes.
It's just every... You know, thinking about aglets and shoelaces...
You do think about aglets a lot, though, don't you?
I do.
Constantly on your mind. Not a second goes past where I'm not thinking about aglets.
Occasionally...
Tell me about your aglets, Robin.
Well, I don't want to talk about my aglets. I want to talk about the aglets. Have you seen the television series Dexter?
I have, briefly. Briefly, yes, I have.
Well, there's a... As you may or may not know, there is a brilliant starting sequence there.
Uh-huh.
In which there's... What is it? Metaphor, innuendo, what's the word?
They're kind of visual analogies.
Kind of sexual.
Visual metaphor. They're kind of illusions. That's
illusions,
what they are.
Yeah.
Visual
it's
illusions.
Kind of alluding to...
Yeah.
There's this great scene where he's doing up his shoelace.
For those of you who don't know, Dexter is about serial killer.
Serial killer will probably do it, won't it?
Yes,
quite. Mm. Anyway, there's a great little scene in the opening sequence where he's doing up his shoelace. And the way that they've filmed it and the way he's pulling his shoes, it looks like he's garrotting someone, you know, strangling him to death with a
visual illusion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he's just doing up his shoelaces.
He is. If you thought otherwise, it's your own fault.
Mm. Now, the garrot's an interesting method of murder, I suppose.
Yeah, well, murder's the only way for it.
Yeah, that's true. Has been used as a torture device, though.
It's not just the act of garrotting. That's an actual thing called a garrote.
Yeah, it? Yeah, the little whatever. No, actually, I think, yeah, I suppose
you garrote. A garrote is anything that's used for...
You garrote with a garrote.
Yeah, okay. Like a sheep with a sheep.
Exactly.
Hang on, wait a minute.
No, yeah. That's... No.
Oh, well.
It was a torture device, though. Obviously, I didn't use it to kill them immediately. Just strangulation.
Piss them off a little bit.
Fairly yeah. uncomfortable, I should think. Used by the Thuggy cult, the infamous cult in India, who used to be highwaymen, robbers. They, I think they
stand
were...
Stand and deliver.
Exactly. Well, yeah, they were a little more thuggish than that.
Or I'll strangle ya.
Interestingly, it worked one way. The word thuggy was derived from the English word meant... English?
Hindi?
Hindi. The Hindi word meaning con man. Mm-hmm. So these thuggy cultists were kind of con men and then came into the English language through the thuggy cult. We reappropriated it
Ooh.
To mean kind of muscular, kind of, you know what thug means.
Yeah, well, who
doesn't? Don't have to go into too much detail.
Thug, you know.
Now, the thuggy cult was a centerpiece in a wonderful adventure film.
Yes.
Just wonderful. You haven't seen it, have you?
No, I haven't. But I do know what it is.
It's a classic.
You've
people.
Told me all about it.
Yes, Tom. Yes. The Temple of Doom, actually, the Indiana Jones. And the
yeah.
Temple of Doom. Those, if you remember, if you recall the film.
I do. Oh.
No. those evil guys that tortured people and threw people into the volcano and stuff, they were loosely based on the thuggy
cult.
The thuggy cult, yes.
Yeah. Was there any garroting in that?
I think it might have been. I think that little prince kid garroted someone or something.
Mm. So did Indy himself do a little bit of a garrot here or there?
He
or
may what? Have. I remember him fighting some big muscular guy.
He did
guy.
Have a big whip. I mean, he could garrot several people at once.
True. He could be a very effective garrotter, couldn't he?
It's not my whip. It's a garrototron. Step right up.
Ooh.
But so now, Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones.
Played by Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Which we actually mentioned earlier.
We did.
If you
we
don't
did.
Know from
we did
Star Wars.
That for, Star
you know,
Wars. Indiana Jones.
He's played more than one thing. Jesus.
He's got an extensive back catalogue of adventure films.
One of the
etc.
I noticed that he was in a lot of other films other than Star Wars. But Mark Hamill wasn't in all that many.
No.
After that, was
no,
he?
No. I'm afraid I'm not familiar enough with Mark Hamill's back catalogue to complete this conversation.
So let's stop right now. Quick.
Let us stop. Yes. Hussy and Fraud, Harrison Ford, for the non-dyslexic, as we mentioned before, was in Star Wars.
Yes.
Was
yes. He so he played Han Solo. I wouldn't call him a ragamuffin. That's probably giving him way too much credit.
No, he was just the one with a kind of rakish charm, you know.
Mm-hmm. Rugged.
Rugged charm.
Certainly rugged.
Winning over the Sheilas.
The layers. Oh well, yeah, I tried.
The layers. Now, what was that hilarious
parody?
Parody, yeah.
Yeah, it was
very.
I'm going to say loosely based on Star Wars because it was, just all over the shop. But it was brilliant.
Really was.
It was a
fantastic.
A little mini movie called Thumb Wars.
Yeah,
and it was done using a very interesting style of animation.
Indeed, it was.
Or filming rather, not animation so much, where they drew faces and had little costumes for their thumbs,
and then they
like doing a puppet show, going with your thumbs. You know when you do that.
Exactly, it would have been really hard as well, because then they superimposed the mouths over the thumbs after they'd filmed them.
And
really labor intensive.
If you look at that again, it's actually their mouths are upside down and
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
what are they called? Chinians or I don't know. You can look them up on YouTube.
Yeah, you should look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. Really kind of put quite a spin on traditional styles of animation, you know. Cell sort of cell based animation, you know, the old flip book is matching up drawings to the next one.
Actually, there was... you showed me some time ago, Tom. A very, very interesting style of animation, which looked like a flipbook animation, just the kind of... It was kind of squiggly, a little bit rough, but it was obviously deliberately rough. What was it called again?
It was called Rejected by a guy called Don Hertzfeld, who's got this massive cult following in the world. I'll say world, but really everybody just loves it.
He's won awards and things.
Yeah, he's won heaps. He won the Academy Award for Best Animated Short.
So, about his style of animation, which wasn't so much the animation, but what he brought to it, which was using the paper he'd drawn on,
yeah, that's
as
true.
Another element to the animation. So
exactly, he took the he took the original idea of matching up the animating using the pictures of frame by frame,
mm-hmm.
Pictures, you know, doing the animation. You know what I'm talking about. But as the film progressed, this particular film, he actually incorporated the medium, which was the paper that he was drawing on. He made that animated as well. He scrunched it up and. Really, really interesting. Recommend you go watch it.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, do we have a little clip to play now?
Oh, we do. Here's a little snippet from Rejected. It doesn't quite work with the visual gags, but the audio is still good.
You're watching the Family Learning Channel. And now, angry ticks fire out of my nipples.
Oh, my ribs.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that was released in 2000, or he won the award?
If he won it in 2000, it must have been released in 2000. So, okay. Yes, won the Academy Award for Best Animated Short in the year 2000.
Beautiful. So
year
that would
2000.
Bring us very neatly to the year 2000.
It would, as it happens, wouldn't it? That's very ingenious of us.
It's like we planned it or something like that.
Something like that.
It's really great, yeah. I believe we were milling about the year 2000 at the time. You know, just doing what you do, fearing bugs, more specifically the Millennium Bug, which actually, because we're in the year 2000, was solved at that, you know, at that point.
Yeah, clearly. We are not all kind of steaming piles of whatever people turn into after they get got by the Millennium Bug. Gizzards?
Millennium Bug poo?
Gizzards?
Gristle? Is that more like
gizzards and gristle? Pile of gizzards.
Oh dear!
Oh, that's hideous.
But so the Millennium Bug. The Millennium Bug was an interesting.
Get on with it.
I will get on with it. Now that was in. You know, you could look at it and say we had 1,000 years for this whole thing to work out, but it was short sightedness that we only left it to the one millennium. It's for anyone who doesn't know what the Millennium Bug
it was those
was
damn
all about.
11th centurions.
Bastards.
They didn't fucking fix the problem.
The Millennium Bug was a problem because once your computer got from 1999 and started cataloguing in 2000, it only saw, I believe, the last two digits. So it saw 99 and then it went to 00.
I think that sounds right.
So 00 is obviously before 1999.
Obviously.
You know, numerically speaking.
Mm.
So I'd have to try and start
again.
Again, yeah, start again. There it is.
Obviously, couldn't computers weren't, you know, didn't come into wide use until, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, that kind of area. So I'm pretty sure the computer just would have gone crazy, grown legs, and started murdering people. I think that was the general fear.
But they would have formed a bug.
Anyway.
So now there's a
nowadays people are acting with a little bit more foresight, I believe.
Wow, that's arguable, but there's a certain group of people from the Long Now Foundation building something called the Clock, the Clock of the Long Now.
Now, this is interesting.
Yes, it is.
Do tell.
Oh, well, right, then. It's a clock that...
He's been building up to this.
I have. I'm very interested in this clock.
It's been jittering all around the place, just waiting.
That's caffeine. Jittering. Now, the Clock of the Long Now, their foundation... Okay, so they're now no longer looking at this year that we are currently in as the year 2010, Tom. Mm. They're looking at it as the year 0-2010, because that adds, you know, centuries and millennia onto the way we look into the future.
It adds approximately 97 millennia, I believe.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so they're building a clock which has, you know, a minimum lifespan of 10,000 years.
Mm.
And the clock that they're building, they say, well, okay, this clock, 5,000 years in the future, we have to be able to maintain this clock. And what if mankind slipped backwards? We don't have computers and we don't have this and that. We still have to be able to maintain it.
What if we regressed to a primitive state?
That's it. So this clock is entirely mechanical. So it's relying on the sun's rays and the Earth's gravity and stuff to keep the clock going. It's amazing.
Really interesting. I do want to point out, though, that if there is some kind of apocalypse, the first thing I'm going to loot is that fucking clock.
Oh, yeah. Everyone will be coming for that clock.
Yeah. I'm going to go for it.
They're keeping it in a mountain, so that'll probably slow you down, especially because I didn't research this enough to tell you which mountain.
Damn it.
But it is an amazing degree of foresight.
Yeah, it definitely to, is. It's to really
imagine
impressive
what we'll have in the future to maintain this clock.
I mean, aside from the mechanical aspects of it, the
but there was
ingenuity going into it. It is a large degree of foresight.
Mm. But it shows that we're not the first people to actually think so far into the future like this.
No, I mean, us 21st centurions, we've got a pretty high opinion of ourselves when
we
it comes
do.
To
we're actually incredibly short-sighted. I mean,
No, but I mean, I think we think we're being so,
I'm
forward-thinking.
I'm wearing
glasses. He's actually short-sighted.
I'm quite short-sighted.
But no, this isn't the first time this has happened. A very good example is at New College in Oxford, isn't it?
Yes, yes. That was a hall, possibly a cathedral. I could just be lying to you blatantly.
No, I believe it was a cathedral.
Where they needed to replace rafters and girders and beams in the in this hall.
It had been 500 years. You know, it was rotting and falling down and everything.
Of course.
It was made out of these massive oak beams.
And they said, well, where are we going to buy these trees? Where do they even exist? And the groundskeeper said, well,
I mean, hey, where are we going to get these 500-year-old trees from to build these big, sturdy beams with?
Yeah, yeah. And the groundskeeper said, well, how about the ones you planted 500 years ago? Mind fuck. That's what they did. They lopped these trees and made this. Actually, I can't tell you that. They might.
Not sure what they did after that. Mm. Needless to say.
We'll use steel instead. Sucker. Enjoy your trees. But so that was...
up
was,
yours, aesthetic beauty.
That was in Oxford, New College, Oxford. What else is in Oxford?
Oxford, well, I believe this was a college of Oxford University.
Oh, it could well be. I'm just really trying to get to...
Oxford University.
Oxford University, everyone!
Ta-da! There's our place, Oxford University. Oxford University, that's where we were.
Yeah, yeah, just, being all like, hey, I know shit and stuff, mostly.
This is Wiki Secretary, by the way, if you've just joined.
That's Tom.
That's me over here. Tom.
Who
that's
are
all
you?
You need to know. Who are you? What was your... Start with a D.
Yeah, Dick Smash McIroncock. That's me. Just, Rob, this is fine. No, I think about it.
I can't believe I made you say that.
We were just boning up on our knowledge ability
Oxford
at Oxford,
yes.
Telling you all about the trees that they have there and that need repairing.
It's
a dilapidated place, I'm told.
You know what doesn't need repairing? It's science faculty.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's tight. it is totally tight, yo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
you feeling
science.
Me? You feeling me?
Like science or like...
Stop feeling me.
Science.
Science at Oxford faculty. University. Such notable alumni, for example, as Joseph Banks.
Who was Joseph Banks?
Oxford. He was the botanist who came on the first fleet with Captain Cook, I believe.
What is this, a plant? Delicious. Oh, I probably need another sample now I've
I believe Bankstown in New South Wales. Probably New South. I think that was named after Banks. Anyway, it probably wasn't in New South Wales.
So didn't he? He carked it.
Yeah. Well, they all carked it eventually. But there was a massive amount of debt on debt. those first fleeters were in deep
credit crisis back then. You know
what I actually? Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, it was a recession. All
well,
those
they
criminals.
Didn't have the interwebs on the old ships, so they couldn't pay off their
poor guys. what I meant to say was death. Great deal of death. Yeah. It's not exactly ironic.
No, it's hardly ironic. It's just what happened in those days.
What I it's a shame though, because people died from a lot of things that are kind of easily curable.
Very easily curable with
like antibiotics.
Yeah, yeah. More notably. Specifically.
I was also gonna say.
Oh, excuse me.
No, it's gone.
Good. Penicillin.
Penicillin. Easily curable. A lot of things curable with penicillin.
Gonorrhea, for example.
Possibly.
People died from it, but that was certainly one of the many examples on Wikipedia when
Indeed.
We looked at penicillin.
Venereal disease, such as gonorrhea, easily curable with penicillin.
Tuberculosis,
possibly. I'm not sure. That's an infection of the lungs, I think, something like that. Coughing up blood.
Another thing I probably should have researched. Consumption.
That's what. Yeah. That's the old. I love those old style names for diseases. Let's talk about them some other time.
Oh, really? Isn't consumption the thing you kind of read? You catch when you read Jane Austen.
I believe it is.
But true. So That was discovered by a notable scientist.
Now, Wikipedia leads us to believe that it was discovered by a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. The one that we know...
and love.
Alexander Fleming is famous for discovering it. In a sort of indirect sort of way. Do you like my turn of phrase there?
Pretty I did.
Nice. It was a mold.
Well, it was an experiment that he was conducting.
Yes.
And his assistant, he left a window open or something, and the sample got infected
with this mold.
With a mold, yes.
Which turned out to be penicillin.
Which was hooray for the infection.
And so they discovered this, and it was something to do with they had some bacteria, and this penicillin mold that grew actually killed the bacteria.
And then
I believe that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was obviously a disease bacteria, and they went, Whoa, hey,
no.
Check it out.
What kind of a discovery is that?
It was actually what's known as a serendipitous discovery, which means when you're looking for something...
you find something else helpful.
And you find something else that's good, but not the thing that you were looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is... serendipitous is, of course, derived from the word serendipity.
Which is...
which is our word.
Our word this week.
For this week, it is.
Our word, which came from a list of topics that we have goals for, which is word, time, place... Object,
person,
and
thing. Event.
Yeah, yeah.
Incident. I prefer
so,
incident.
Don't forget to send in your own suggestion for any one of those topics.
Now we are unreachable. Sorry, unreachable by SMS at the moment.
I can reach you. You're all flannelly. What is that?
Yes.
But anyway, you can. We've got a blog set up.
Yep.
Wikicircuitry.blogspot.com.
Leave us a comment there, and we'll consider it for the next show.
Or also reachable on our Facebook page. If you look up Wiki Circuitry with Tom and Rob,
You should find it
on a Bookface. You should be fine.
This is Wiki Circuitry. Where were we? We were at serendipity, weren't we?
Yeah, just serendipity.
It's one of my favourite words, actually. It's got such a specific meaning that it makes it really pleasant. As we were saying before, it's a word that means you discover something while looking for something else, but that something that you discovered is actually...
It's awfully helpful.
Yes, exactly. Common etymology is from the Persian name for Sri Lanka, serendip. So it's about these three princes of Serendip that travelled around making discoveries by accidents of sagacity. That's
another great word.
Sagacity. It's good, isn't it? Sage. Derived from the word sage. Okay. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very important in science. Very important. Many discoveries.
Oh, more than you'd realise, I think.
Mm,
no, as you, specifically.
Yeah, well, much more than... Many more than I realised. For example, the penicillin we spoke about just earlier was...
Just moments ago.
Moments ago. Was a great example of serendipity. Another one... was by a man called Alfred Hoffman.
Yes. Now, honestly, officer, he just accidentally ingested LSD. He's noted as the discoverer of LSD,
Swiss chemist.
LSD's a nasty, nasty substance that no one should be subjecting themselves to. But it.
Well, no, I agree. Absolutely not. We do not
Controne or condone, for that matter.
Drug use, especially by Alfred Hoffman.
And especially if you're a scientist, you should
I don't
better.
Care what he's discovered.
Like, hey, I'll make my own.
You know.
See you in hell.
Another interesting one was the discovery of gelignite by Alfred Nobel.
Yeah, is that the same Nobel from, you know, like a Nobel Prize?
Yeah, it is.
For example?
It is exactly.
Is that
exactly.
The Alfred Nobel?
That's the Alfred Nobel.
Incredible.
Yeah, now this guy's, I guess it's a bit of a sad story. You know, he was the one that discovered gelignite, also TNT.
TNT.
Don't
was,
believe TNT was serendipitous, but gelignite absolutely was.
Yeah, so he discovered this explosive compound and was like, hey, we can use it for mining and all these great things. But then other people were like, actually, we could just use it to, like, blow people up. And
yeah,
shit.
Hey, let's murder some guys.
And so Alfred Nobel created the Nobel Prize to promote... Use for good instead of evil, that kind of biz, you know. But I couldn't help but notice, you know, the discovery of gelignite and TNT is, you know, for that reason, peaceful, but also quite deadly. It's quite ironic.
It is.
A good example of irony.
I think it's a great example of irony. This man who was just trying to do good and he managed to discover these things that can only do evil.
Mm.
Well, not
mm.
only. I mean, there are.
I mean, unless you count like blowing out rocks as murder.
Murder.
Rocky murder.
Of course, cannon has been used for violence against other people, mm-hmm. which was exactly the kind of thing he was trying to
not promote.
Exactly. I was going to say dispromote. I don't think that's right.
Dispromote.
Now, irony is a concept originally from Greek tragedy, and it's meant to symbolize, it was actually a character called Iron. I'm not going to go into the details.
Iron butterfly?
No. Mm. But, you know, it kind of symbolizes the constant struggle and despair of humanity, you know, always striving for things.
Symbolizes?
Yeah, I believe it does, yes. This is obviously one of the many things, theatrical symbolism, one of the many things studied under the umbrella of semiotics.
Ooh, semiotics.
Mm. And now, if anyone's familiar with linguistics, as I am.
And everyone is, Tom.
Clearly. They'll know the field of semantics, which is the study of meaning. This falls under semiotics. Semiotics is actually the study of symbols and the way different symbols and signs, not just, you know, literally symbols, but, you know, cultural motifs and especially words and things like that are highly symbolic, falls under the study of semiotics. One very important semiotician who's brought it to, forefront popularity, let's say. Semiotics is fairly popular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Umberto Eco is a famous semiotician.
Mm-hmm. Is he famous for other little...
He is. He's an author, actually. Really? He wrote that book.
Oh, Name of the Rose.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Fantastic.
I didn't just look that up recently. I knew that. I'm pretty smart. But what I did know is it was adapted to...
what's it called?
Screenplay.
Screenplay, yeah. Film. Film is made after the screenplay.
Well, but starring in aforementioned thing.
Mm. Was Sean Connery.
You lied to me, young man.
No,
it wasn't quite Christian.
Christian Bale. He was. He was kind of an offsider to Sean Connery's detective.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that the Da Vinci Code was based on this kind of Name of the Rose story. I suggest you all go and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But Christian Bale, very young Christian Bale, was in it.
Christian Bale's our little celebrity guy.
He is.
For this week.
Mm.
And he's fallen under the umbrella for Tom and Rob's ridiculous celebrity of our Wiki Circuitry show because there is he flipped out. Now, completely. Understandably, someone walked into his studio while he was recording. Tom, we've had experience with that. That just pisses you right off.
Some unnamed... actually, Christian Bale names him, but... Don't want to draw attention to it.
No, but we've got a little clip here. I just can't stress enough about a language warning
there
here.
There is a very profound language warning on this one. So, for fuck's sake, turn your fucking volume down, please.
Kick your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick!
I'm sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing?
Oh, I'm not doing anything, Christian Bale. Please don't yell at me. Why am I speaking like this?
I don't know. Now, that was on the set.
Various accents.
Yeah, you're a madman. Now, that was on the set of Terminator 3 Salvation. It was flipping out. At the director of photography who walked across his set.
I thought it was the director of lighting. Either way, you know, some kind of significant other on the set.
Wife. Now we're running out of time here. So that was
Very
Christian Bale.
We're running dreadfully out of time.
Sure are. What do we do today?
Well, we started off with the aglet.
Mm-hmm.
Garroted our way all the way to Harrison Ford. I'm sorry. to, what did you call it? The very mystical year 2000.
I did.
Studied at Oxford University for a little while. All about serendipitous... Well...
Discoveries.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Serendipity.
Which brought us to...
That word. To Christian Bale. Flip out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Jump on our blog, wikicircuitry.blogspot.com, or find us on Facebook with Wiki Circuitry with Tom and Rob, and leave your suggestion for next week's mystery point, and we'll be sure to... Yeah, we'll get back to you.
Yeah,
don't call us, we'll call you.
Anyway, that's all we got for you now.
I've been Tom.
This is Robin.
This is Dick Smash.
Dick Smash, big eye cook.
See you next week, guys.
Suckers.
Oh.
Sin.
Wiki Circuitry, 7 p.m. Saturdays, 90.7 FM, Sin Radio.
Brother Jack!